Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. In this audio, I'm going to cover Genesis 4, verses 16 through 26. Our context is this. In the first part of chapter 4, verses 1 through 15, we have the story of the first murder, the first fratricide. Cain killed Abel. We see God putting a curse on Cain, so he has to wander. First of all, the ground is cursed, so Cain can't grow things, as was his usual profession, and then he had to wander. And he wandered all the way over to Nod in the east of or in the front of Eden, and he became worried that he would be killed by a kinsman avenger. And so he asked God for mercy, and God in his mercy put a mark on Cain so that nobody could kill him. So we start now in verse 16, Genesis 4. Then Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Now let's anticipate a little bit the problem of where did Cain find his wife, that old theological chestnut. He goes to Nod, and eventually he's going to get married. The question is, where would Cain's wife have come from? If Cain started the city, so there, you would think, would not be a wife there before Cain got there. However, some people say that Cain built the city in the land of Nod, but that there were a lot of people there already. This is from ChristianAnswers.net. Let me read this quote. Others have argued that because Cain built a city in the land of Nod, there must have been a lot of people there. However, the Hebrew word translated as city need not mean what we might imagine from the connotations of city today. The word meant a walled town or a protected encampment. Even 100 people would be plenty for such a city. So, again, city, town, those words are always hard. Even in English, we have trouble distinguishing the two. I know in Chinese is a big problem, too. They would call a village something that had 30 or 40,000 people in it in China. It's incredible. The numbers over there are so different than the numbers here. So Cain goes out there, lives in Nod, and Nod, as we know from our previous audio, Nod means wandering, as the NIV Study Bible says. So Cain became a wanderer in the land of wandering. We'll talk about the problem of Cain's wife in just a little bit. And of course, he's wandering out of Eden because of his sin. Genesis 4, 17 through 18. Cain was intimate with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. Then Cain became the builder of a city, and he named the city Enoch after his son. Arad was born to Enoch. Arad fathered Mahujael. Mahujael fathered Methushael, and Methushael fathered Lamech. Now, who was Cain's wife? Well, first of all, it might not have been Cain's first wife, but we'll assume that she is. She's famous in the apologetic literature. Skeptics love to ask, where did she come from? Oh, you believe in the Bible? Well, where did Cain get his wife? Well, here's some options as to who she was. She could have been Cain's sister or some other close relation, because remember, there are no laws against incest at that time. There were few, if any, genetic disorders at that time. The gene pool at the beginning of mankind was large enough to handle close relations marrying. But by the time that we get to Moses, which is about 2.5 millennia later on the young earth creation chronology, genetic defects had appeared, and so Moses legislated against incest. We see in Leviticus 18:6, you are not to come near any close relative for sexual intercourse. I am Yahweh. Now, after that verse, there's lots of other specific examples of what was considered incest in the law of Moses. So then you couldn't do it. But back then, way 2,500 years at the least. I mean, if you take a different chronology than the young earth chronology, it's even more time. Well, there was a big gene pool, and so you could marry your sister and it wouldn't be a big deal, even though it sounds disgusting to us today. But of course, with today's gender fluidity and sexual immorality, maybe people don't think that's a problem. Maybe 10 years from now, the progressive left will have gotten to the point, well, of course it's all right to marry our sister. They love each other, don't they? Well, at any rate, there were other examples of pre-Mosaic intermarriage. Noah's grandchildren must have married brothers or sisters or first cousins, because remember, there were only 8 people on the boat, and only 8 people got off the boat, and they ended up populating the earth. Abraham married his half-sister, Genesis 20, verse 2. Abraham said about his wife Sarah, she is my sister. So King Abimelech of Gerar had Sarah brought to him. There's Verse 12 says the same thing, that Abraham married his sister, was his half-sister. So they were a little bit looser about degrees of consanguinity in those early days, and so that's not a problem. And it really is ironic for skeptics to mock this, where did Cain get his wife? evolutionists believe that all life evolved from one cell. So when life evolved into humans, into a human, was it a male? Was it a female? I don't know. Who did that human marry? Did they all evolve separately and all of a sudden, whoo, we have a fully formed human being now after millions of years of evolution and now they can go marry each other? That's a little hard to picture. Now in verse 17, Cain became the builder of a city. As I just said, the word city is a little fuzzy. The Hebrew for that word city can mean any permanent settlement, however small. It's logical that Cain needed to go to Nod to build a quote-unquote city because he can't do agriculture anymore since both he and the land were cursed. He tried to redeem himself from his wandering state in the land of Nod by settling down in that city. This is the first city mentioned in the scripture, and that city gave Cain's descendants a chance to flourish in the arts. They would not have been able to flourish in agriculture. They wouldn't have any kind of patrimony passed on to them because Cain couldn't grow anything. And so they became urban dwellers, built the first city there in the land of Nod, the first city named, which was named Enoch, after his son. Now, the interesting thing is why didn't Cain name the city after himself? Well, John Gill suggests that Cain had pretty well lost his brand value at that time. He was a premeditated murderer, and everybody would know it, and you're going to name a city after a murderer? That's like naming an American city O.J. Simpsonville or something. You just don't do that. So he named it after his son. Now, the genealogy of Cain is mentioned in these verses, 17 and 18. Verse 18, Irad was born to Enoch. Now, there is good evidence that these genealogies are selective and not complete. When I say selective, I mean certain names were chosen out of the family tree to put in the genealogy, but not all of them are father, son, son, father, son, like so, but that they might be grandsons or great-great-grandsons and so forth. Now, some evidence for that is if you include Adam in this list here in verse 18, you got seven names: Adam, Cain, Enoch, Irad, Mahujael, Methushael, and Lamech. Seven, of course, is the traditional number symbolizing completeness in the scriptures. And so that sounds like that's a stylistic flourish on the part of Moses. Now, who is this Irad? Nothing else is known of him, either in secular literature or the scriptures, John Gill says. Likewise for Enoch, Mahujael, and Methusael, we don't know anything about them, so we can forget them. Now, the word Enoch, that's Cain's son in the name of the city, it signifies instructed, dedicated, or initiated, and especially in sacred things, as Adam Clark says. Now, if that's so, that's evidence that Cain appears to have dedicated Enoch to God. Might have made him the family priest. Back then, each family had a priest. They didn't have the Levitical priesthood, so each family had a priest. And Cain might have thought, well, I'm forever excluded by my crime, so I'm going to name my son Enoch and instruct him in how to be a priest. Now, that would be evidence that Cain might have repented for his sin. People actually debate whether Cain ever repented or not, and of course, we can't know from this extreme end of this extreme length of time, whether Cain repented or not. I hope he did. We go to Genesis 4:19. Lamech took two wives for himself. Lamech's at the tail end of that genealogy there. Lamech took two wives for himself, one named Ada and the other named Zillah. Ada means ornament and Zillah means shadow. So I'm going to call her Ada the ornament and Zillah the shadow. You notice it's two wives. There's never been two wives before, so now polygamy enters history, as the NIV Study Bible Gil Clark and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown point out. Now, this is not surprising that the evil practice of polygamy started in the line of the wicked Cain. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that Cain is a fruitful source of corruption and misery. Polygamy is corruption and misery. Isn't it interesting? If finding a wife is a good thing, it seems like having two wives would be a double good thing. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Polygamy is misery for those who have to practice it. Genesis 4:20-22. Ada bore Jabal. He was the father of the nomadic herdsman. Ada remembers one of the wives of Lamech, Ada the ornament. Jabal was the father of the nomadic herdsman. Verse 21, Jabal's brother was named Jubal. He was the father of all who play the lyre and the flute. A lyre is like a guitar-like instrument, and a flute is an instrument that you blow. Of course, it's hard to go from one language to another with musical instruments, but that's generally the idea, a stringed instrument and a wind instrument. So Jubal was the musician. Jabal was the shepherd, the nomadic herdsman. Verse 23, Zillah the Shadow, she bore Tubal-Cain, who made all kinds of bronze and iron tools. And so Zillah is the mother of Tubal-Cain, who is the metalsmith. Cain, by the way, means metalsmith, so Tubal-Cain means Tubal the metalsmith. And this is a good name for him, since he was the one that made bronze and iron tools. Gill and Clark suggests that the heathens got the Vulcan god from Tubal-Cain. I don't know about that. Tubal-Cain's sister was Nama, which means pleasant, according to John Gill. Nothing more is said of her in the scriptures, so we can forget her. Now, these tools that Tubal-Cain made, they were also used as weapons, as the NIV Study Bible says. However, agricultural instruments must have been used before this time. In other words, Tubal-Cain cannot be said to be the inventor of bronze and iron agricultural implements, because they must have been, these type of instruments must have been in use long before, because Cain was a tiller of the ground, and so was Adam. How could they have cultivated the ground without spades, hooks, etc.? Some of these arts were useless to man while innocent and upright, but after his fall, they became necessary. So Adam and Eve had fallen for a while, and they needed implements. So Tubal-Cain, who's several generations after Cain, he could not have invented the agricultural instruments, but he worked them. He made them. Didn't say he invented them. He said he made them. We go to Genesis 4, verses 23 and 24. Lamech said to his wives, Ada, the ornament, and Zillah, the shadow, "Hear my voice, wives of Lamech. Pay attention to my words. For I killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain is to be avenged seven times over, then for Lamech it will be 77 times." Now this pair of verses presents a good deal of interpretive difficulty. First of all, let's point out that Lamech is making a solemn pronouncement to his two wives. Why would he do that? Well, John Gill says that Lamech is talking, boasting perhaps about what he has done or what he will do. The verb tense killed is unclear, but he's boasting about what's going on here to remove Ada and Zillah's fears that an avenger was coming. An avenger coming to take care of Cain's murder several generations later after the murder. Now, as I said, when Lamech said, "I killed a man," that verb tense is unclear there in the Hebrew. John Gill points out that Lamech might be boasting of what he should do if someone tried to attack him. And I'm going to go with that theory just for a minute and show that it actually solves a good many problems. What Lamech is doing is saying, "Look, Ada, look, Zillah, you don't need to worry about me getting killed by a kinsman avenger of Cain. I'm the descendant of Cain, and therefore I'm liable for what Cain did. That is not going to happen." Now, of course, this assumes that relatives should suffer for the crimes of their relatives. Well, I don't know what that theory is. That doesn't make any sense from my point of view, but maybe that's what they thought back then. Now, Adam Clark takes the same view, that it's in the future, "For I will kill a man for wounding me." In other words, if any kinsman avenger comes after me, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill that man for trying to strike me, for trying to avenge Abel's death on Cain's descendant, me, Lamech. I'm going to kill him. So let's read Clark's quotation here. Quote, "Now we may suppose that the descendants of Cain were in continual alarms, lest some of the other family should attempt to avenge the death of Abel on them, as they were not permitted to do it on Cain." Remember in our previous audio, first 15 verses in Genesis 4, God said, anybody that tries to avenge Abel's murder by murdering Cain will be himself avenged seven times over. And I take that to be symbolically, you know, but it's perfectly avenged. So the avenger will be avenged. Vengeance will be taken upon the avenger who takes Cain's life. So Cain's life was protected. All right, so continuing with Clark's quote here, "Lest some of the other family should attempt to avenge the death of Abel on them, as they were not permitted to do it on Cain." In other words, the idea is people are angry at Cain. We've got to get him. Oh, but God said God put a mark on Cain, so we can't get Cain. Well, that's all right. We'll wait and get his descendants. "In order to dismiss those fears, Lamech spoke to this effect to his wives. Why should you render yourselves miserable by such ill-founded fears? We have slain no person. We have not done the least wrong to our brethren of the other family. Surely then reason should dictate to you that they have no right to injure us. It is true that Cain, one of our ancestors, killed his brother Abel, but God, willing to pardon his sin and give him space to repent, threatened to punish those with a sevenfold punishment who should dare to kill him. If this be so, then those who should have the boldness to kill any of us who are innocent may expect a punishment still more rigorous. For if Cain should be avenged sevenfold on the person who should slay him, surely Lamech or any of his innocent family should be avenged 77-fold on those who should injure them. Now that answers the question. That's one answer to the question of why would Lamech think vengeance would be taken on him 77 times? That's why, because he's innocent. He thinks, according to this view, according to Gill and Clark's view, he's innocent. And he says, I'm innocent, so any kinsman avenger that comes after me, I'm going to kill him. And if by chance he ends up killing me, then he's going to have vengeance taken on him 77 times. All right, so let's now look at the options of this word killed. I, Lamech, killed a man for wounding me. It could be that the word is in the past tense and Lamech actually wantonly murdered, first-degree murder of somebody. Or it could have been he accidentally killed him. He got in a fight or something, axe head fell off, killed him, manslaughter. Or it could be his culpability is even less and he killed the man in self-defense. And so the argument would be this, as Adam Clark says, anybody that kills me for killing a man in self-defense, that kinsman avenger is going to be judged 77 times as opposed to Cain's killer who only got judged 7 times. Cain was a wanton murderer, and so it would be more justified to kill Cain, even though God protected him. So he gets, that kinsman avenger gets judged 7 times, but by golly, you kill me, a man who did not kill premeditatedly, but only in self-defense, well, then the person who takes vengeance on me is going to be killed 77 times. In other words, Lamech is innocent compared to Cain, so killing Lamech would be heinous, subject to a greater 77-fold punishment. Jameson Fawcett Brown goes along with that and says it seems to indicate that Lamech had slain a man in self-defense, and its drift is to assure his wives, by the preservation of Cain, that an unintentional homicide, as he was, could be in no danger. A fourth option as to what killed means is it's in the future tense and that Lamech is completely innocent of killing anybody. He's just saying in the future, I'm going to kill somebody who tries to kill me. That's according to Gill and Clark's reasoning that I just gave you, that he's defending himself against a kinsman avenger trying to avenge Abel's death by killing a descendant of Cain. It's a little bit complicated, but I like the interpretation that says that Lamech is getting ready to kill a kinsman avenger on him in the future tense. I like Gill and Clark's reasoning here. He's saying, hey, if that kinsman avenger gets me and kills me, he's going to be liable 77 times for killing me because I'm an innocent man. This is a minor point, but it's interesting. Note the symbolism, by the way, of 77. This is typical in the Old Testament. It comes up over and over again, especially in the book of Revelation. 7 is the number of divine completion, maturity, perfection, and 10 is the number of manyness or multitude, divine completion and protection. So you got 7 times 10 is 70. 70 times 7 is just intensified. So it just means, and you can't take that literally. You see the number so much, it's obviously it's not literal. All right, so we go to Genesis 4:25. Adam was intimate with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth. For she said, God has given me another child in place of Abel since Cain killed him. Now, the word Seth means granted, as the NIV note says. This explains the four. She gave birth to a son, named himself four, because she said, God has given me another child. In other words, I named him Seth because God gave him to me, and that's what the word Seth means. It means granted or given. Now, Seth's posterity alone continued after the flood. Someone, I think it's Adam Clark, has made the point that when you in a genealogy we have two or more sons in a family, the son in whose line the Messiah is to descend is especially cared for by God. And examples of that in Adam's family, you got Seth, he is the progenitor of the Messiah, and so he's especially cared for. In Noah's family, Shem, the father of the Semites, where the family that Jesus is in, Shem is particularly cared for. In Abraham's family, Isaac, who of course is the ancestor of David and then Jesus, he's especially cared for, as opposed to Ishmael. And then in David's family, Solomon and Nathan, Solomon is especially cared for. Trying to emphasize the importance of the Messiah and the genealogy of the Messiah. Now, Seth's genealogy was the only one in these antediluvian genealogies that made it past the flood. Seth's genealogy went like this. Adam, Seth, Enos, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, the second Lamech, and then Noah. Cain's posterity didn't make it that far. We assume he got wiped out. Now, when Eve had this child, this replacement for Abel, it could be that Eve thought that this new child, Seth, was the promised seed of the Protoevangelium, Genesis 3:15, where God said to the serpent, the daughter of Eve's going to have a seed, going to crush her head. Eve could have thought that was the Messiah that she was having, just like she thought Cain was. She was wrong about Cain. Maybe she thought Seth was. Now, notice that this third child, Seth, is the replacement of Abel. God has given me another child in place of Abel. Now, this creates a good deal of problems here, so let's go through this carefully. First of all, it sounds like, just as you read it, that Seth actually is Eve's third son, but there are some people who dispute that. We have Abel dead already. Cain is alienated and banished, so there's no one to carry on the family line, so there needs to be another man in the family line, and that would be Seth. Now, that seems straightforward enough, but if it's true, it screws up, or it potentially screws up the analysis that says there were many people at this time. Now, why do we need many people at the time of Seth's, at the time of Abel's death? Why do we need many people? Because Cain wandered into a city. Where did the people come from? He's scared of kinsmen redeemers. Where did the people come from? If there's no, you know, where did they come from? He had a wife. Where did his wife come from? And generally, people say that, well, there was 100 years or so between the death of Abel and the birth of Seth. And during that 100 years, Adam and Eve had a lot of other offspring, which provided these people, the kinsmen redeemers, the city, Cain's wife. And I've mentioned that in the previous audio, and that makes a lot of sense. But there's a problem here. It doesn't sound like there's 100 years between the death of Abel and the replacement for Abel, Seth. Just doesn't sound like it. Now, the text never said that Seth was the third son, so that leaves open the possibility that there were other sons in a 100-year interval between the death of Abel and the birth of Seth. By the way, where does that 100-year interval come from? In Genesis 5, it says that Seth was born in Adam's 130th year. We assume that Cain and Abel were around Adam's 30th year if they were about 30 years old, and so it's a reasonable assumption. Well, how do we handle this problem? If Seth showed up 100 years after Abel was killed and Eve had lots and lots of daughters and sons, why would she be saying that Seth replaces Abel? She already had a lot of sons to replace Abel. Why would she think especially that Seth was replacing Abel? Well, you could say that during those 100 years, it was all daughters that were born and not sons. Well, that's not statistically likely at all. That's not an answer. Well, Rich Dean, the old earther, says that there was not only daughters born in that 100-year period between Abel and Seth, but they were sons too. Let me read his quote. The assumption seems to be that Cain and Abel were the first two children of Adam and Eve. Although Cain does seem to be the firstborn, the text is not clear that Abel was the secondborn, but only that he was the second son. Later, the narrative indicates that Adam and Eve produced other sons and daughters. So it is possible that Adam and Eve produced daughters between the birth of Cain and Abel. It is also likely that other sons and daughters were produced after the birth of Abel. We don't know how old Cain and Abel were when Cain murdered his brother, but they seem to be at least young adults since they are both engaged in a trade for their living. And I'll insert here, just say 30 years, just for a round number, a good estimate. The second thing one notices in Cain's seeming paranoia about being found and revenge being taken against his for killing Abel. The only way this makes sense is if the brothers and sisters of Abel were upset that Cain had killed their brother. Although the period of time between the birth of Cain and the death of Abel is not given in the Bible, it would seem that this period was probably over 100 years, since the birth of Adam's next son, Seth, is said to have occurred when Adam was 130 years old. Adam and Eve could have produced many daughters during that period of time, and Dean didn't say sons, but he could have produced a lot of sons, too. Well, that's possible, but Mr. Dean doesn't mention why it sounds like that Seth is a replacement for Abel. If there were many other daughters and sons produced in that 100-year period, there would have already been a lots of replacements for Abel. Well, I haven't seen any writing on this, so this is how I'm going to handle it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize the whole problem with three options. Now, there can be other options besides these three, but these are basic options. Any other options are just variations on the theme. And I'm going to try to answer that weighty question of where did Cain's wife come from? Not only his wife, but the kinsman redeemer, the people in the city of Enoch and so forth. And I'm going to try to interact that with the problem of, well, why is Seth a replacement for Abel if there were other sons creating all those people for Cain to interact with, that there were other sons? Why wouldn't they be a replacement for Abel? So that's the problem stated. And I'm going to give you three options. Before I give you the three options, and all three of these options, I'm going to assume that Cain killed Abel right before Seth's birth in Adam's year 130. That's the way the narrative sort of reads without putting any time gaps in there. I'm going to give you three options. Two of them will work, I think. One of them will not work. Options one and three will work. Option two will not. Here's option one. Adam had unmentioned sons and daughters after Cain and Abel's birth. Well, let me give you some assumptions on a timeline. Picture a timeline between 0 and 130. Adam is born, is created at 0, and he has Seth at 130. Now, let's say that Cain and Abel begin their work life around 30 years old, probably earlier, but let's say 30 to make the numbers round. So between the time they start working and the time that Seth is born is 100 years, and let's assume that Abel is killed right before Seth is born on all three options. So we have a 100-year period. The murder happens at the end of the 100-year period. Cain and Abel have been working for 100 years before they have their little dust-up. Now, here's option one. Adam had sons and daughters who were not mentioned after Cain and Abel's birth, but before Abel's murder at the end of the 130-year period. Cain and Abel would have probably been born somewhere near the beginning of, near the creation, assuming Cain and Abel are the first and second child. But there could easily, during that 100-year period, been a lots of other sons and daughters born, and that would solve the problem of where did Cain's acquaintances come from. They would get married with each other, have kids, offspring. They multiply very quickly. You got a city in Nod that Cain could wander to. You could have kinsmen redeemers that could be coming after Cain. And, of course, you could have Cain's wife. So that solves that problem. But there's other problems with this option. Why didn't Moses mention these other sons that showed up after Cain and Abel were born and before Seth was born? Well, a possible answer to that is they weren't important to the story. The story is about the first fratricide, Cain and Abel. And it's the story of the evil line of Cain versus the righteous line of Seth. And these other kids, these other sons, didn't fit the narrative. Another problem is why did Eve say Seth replaced Abel? I mean, on this option number one, she would have had many other sons and daughters born in that 130-year period, so she loses one. So why does she say, oh, I've got another kid, Seth, to replace Abel? She had plenty of sons to replace Abel. Well, but those sons would be previously born, and you get a kid killed, you feel like you need to replace the previous one that just was killed. This is my wife's solution, and she has another solution, too. She wanted to replace a righteous son, righteous Abel, and Seth, of course, was the founder of the righteous line of Seth, and so you got righteous Seth replacing righteous Abel. This was a special replacement that the other sons couldn't do as well. So I think that's option number one is perfectly reasonable. It solves two problems. Where do Cain's acquaintances come from? His wife in the city of Enoch and his kinsmen redeemers. And it solves the problem of why Eve said that Seth replaced Abel. Now let's go to option number two. Adam has no unmentioned sons before Seth's birth in Adam's year 130. Well, that easily solves the problem of why Eve felt that Seth replaced Abel, because she had no other son. She just had Cain. He's been banished. Abel's dead. She has no son. Oh, thank God Seth shows up. The problems with that view, though, is, do we really think that Adam is going to have no other sons for 130 years between Abel's birth and Abel's murder? No sons at all? And also, if you have no previous sons before the murder of Abel, where do Cain's acquaintances come from? Where does the city of Enoch come from in the land of Nod? Where do the kinsmen avengers come from that are going to kill him? Where does Cain's wife come from? Well, the one possible answer to that would be that Abel had sons and daughters. Adam and Eve didn't have any, but Abel did. But that doesn't make any sense, because it's just not likely going to happen that Adam doesn't have any other sons for 130 years. So option two, we'll throw in the can. Here's option three. Cain was not Adam's firstborn, as is often assumed, and Abel is not the secondborn. Other sons and daughters were born before Cain and Abel was born. And whenever they were born, Cain and Abel's born, doesn't matter. Cain kills Abel near Adam's year 130. So what problems might option three solve? Well, Seth is said to replace Abel. Abel would have been killed just before Seth born. So it's reasonable that Eve would feel that Seth is a replacement for Abel rather than those other previously born unnamed sons. They would be further away, and so it would make sense. I just had Abel killed, and Seth is just now born, and Abel is the last child that was born to me after all those other sons were born, and so therefore Abel is being replaced. The other sons would be out of the question. And this option three also solves the acquaintances of Cain problem, because you have previously born other sons of Adam and Eve that could provide the population necessary. Now, the problems with this option is, why did Moses not mention the sons born previous to Cain and Abel born? Well, they're not important to the narrative, but the first fratricide is. Also, why would Eve say, I have born a male child with the Lord's help? Why would she be so excited? Oh, I've got a baby. Abel, the argument being that she wouldn't be that excited if she had had previous sons. She was used to having babies. Well, the answer to that, a mother is excited at every child's birth. And so she could very easily have said, oh, I've born a child with the Lord's help, just like the previous 10 children were born with the Lord's help. Actually, option three is really a variation on option one, which is basically there were other sons of Adam and Eve that were born and other daughters, and they provided the people that Cain needed to interact with. The problem of Seth replacing Abel, the problem might arise in some people's minds because these other unnamed sons that were born might be replacements for Abel. That's not really a problem. As I've explained in these various options, options one and options two, they can be handled. So this is a very complicated question, of course. This is as far as I'm going to go with it. You could probably go on forever with it, but we're finished right now. All right, that's enough of contemplation on that problem of where the other population was around Cain and Abel and how to account for them. Let's consider at the end of this verse the grief and pain Eve brought upon herself by her sin. She ate that fruit, and as a result, she has one son that's dead, and she has another son banished from her sight. Once again, illustrating the tragic results of sin in one's personal life. We go to Genesis 4, verse 26. A son was born to Seth also, and he named him Enosh. At that time, people began to call on the name of Yahweh. So now we start Seth's righteous genealogy that ends up with the Messiah. Seth's genealogy goes like this: Adam, Seth, Enos, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah. And as we know, Noah is in the righteous line of the Messiah. Now, Enosh is the first man in this genealogy. Enosh means man, just like Adam does. It's generally interpreted to mean, according to John Gill, weak, feeble, frail, mortal, and miserable. It's a great name for your son, is it not? But it could also mean that the man is sociable and familiar. Sometimes these Hebrew names, just one word, are hard to translate. This genealogy is started out by the notation that at that time people began to call on the name of Yahweh. So this makes Seth's line contrasted with Cain's line. Cain's line didn't have people that called on the name of Yahweh, but Seth did. People began to call on the name of Yahweh. So Seth is righteous, Cain is evil, he's proud, he's self-reliant, but not Seth's line. Enosh means weak, feeble, frail, mortal. He's not self-reliant, he's relying on God. Now Adam had called on God before, Abel had called on God before, but now there are more people calling on God, Seth. So God always maintains a remnant to worship him in the midst of all the unbelief and hatred of God that there is. And that has gone on for thousands of years, even to this day. There are so many people that hate God, but there's always a remnant that's called that love him. Now, there are alternate translations here. The KJV margin has, then began men to call themselves by the name of the Lord. Instead of they began to call on Yahweh, they called themselves by the name of the Lord. Well, either way, it's all right. It shows that they're righteous. Now, when was Enosh born? When Seth was 105 years old. We read in Genesis 5:6, Seth was 105 years old when he fathered Enosh. That's a heck of a time to be having your first kid, 105. Whew. Now, let's look at another possibility of how you can translate this. At that time, people began to call on the name of Yahweh. Adam Clark says that many eminent men have translated this phrase as they began profanely to call on the name of Yahweh, which means that they would have begun idolatry at this point. I don't think that's legitimate because it takes away from the main idea that Seth's line, the Messiah's line, was the godly line, which of course is a big theme in Genesis. Ladies and gentlemen, I have now finished chapter 4 of Genesis, namely verses 16 through 26, Cain's descendants and Seth's replacement and Seth's birth as a replacement for Abel. In our next audio, we will look at Genesis 5, verses 1 through 32, Adam's descendants to Noah. It is basically a genealogy. We'll pick up special things to note as we go through that genealogy. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.